like start bringing kids on campus. I think the dead period ended at noon Thursday.
Right.
But you would start those visits Friday morning. And they're going to have them at least through this weekend. And then I think, as I said, if Indiana gets the success, maybe they hope they will, maybe one, I would say one more like sort of top target sort of situation, then maybe they not necessarily stop, but they just sort of pause, take a breath. And then you hit the next sort of, I would say down cycle in the portal, but the next sort of little lull where some of these teams that were going to have a lot of the NIL resources, that were going to have a lot of needs, and were going to be really active in the portal, have started to fill some of those spots. And so they sort of reset a little bit, and they say, okay, now that we've got, you know, these two guys or these three guys or these four guys, how have our needs evolved? How have they changed? What's different? Is there somebody new in the portal in the last couple weeks that we weren't necessarily looking at when this whole thing began?
Who saw John Calipari quitting?
Yeah, do we need to, you know, do we need to reassess because we didn't expect, I don't know, we didn't expect to get Umar Ballo. Well, he's a different kind of center to Kalel Ware, so do we need to reassess what we need at another position? Or is that going to change what we're looking at in terms of, you know, sort of front court depth or whatever? The point is that's when, like, you know, some teams will just kind of slow down for just a second, get their bearings, and then go again. And I think what you're seeing Indiana in right now is the end of that first wave is going to come at the end of this weekend in terms of visitors coming through Bloomington, Indiana making their pitch and either getting commits or guys moving on.
The other question that is presented frequently is how much money? And you got to talk about it because it's no longer the elephant in the room. How much money is there? What kind of players are left to get now that you've brought in a Pac-12 two-time first-teamer, defensive team as well, another Pac-12 kid from Washington State, and a McDonald's All-American? Is the endless pool of money endless, or is there a we need more? Where do we even go from here? If you're a fan, you say, well, can we dream about getting some of these other guys? Do we have the resources to do that, or is this a brand new territory and we're all learning this together?
Well, I think, I mean, first of all, there's no like clean answers to a lot of these questions. Obviously,
there's salary cap.
There is, you know, you only have so many scholarships, right? So, like, we can say that at most Indiana's not going to take more than four more guys unless someone leaves. So then even that isn't necessarily a question with a completely clean answer, because suddenly maybe somebody looks around and says, whoa, I got recruited over. I didn't expect it.
Right.
I'm going to go see kind of what this portal's all about, and then suddenly a new need pops up for you. I'm not in any way hinting or predicting that's going to happen. My point is, you ask about NIL. Well, there's never a firm number. And there's never a firm number, one, because – you know, you're always a little bit nervous publicizing that stuff. Different programs get different numbers, and every, you know, people start to complain, well, I'm not getting enough of this. You always want to be careful, like your locker room doesn't get bogged down and he's getting this and I'm only getting this and whatever else. And the other part of it too is like, hey, listen, I'd bet you a decent amount of cash that for the right guy, you could feel like you'd reached whatever your pool limit was, your budget limit was. And for the right guy, maybe, you know, your donors could free up another $25,000 or whatever, if you understand what I'm saying. So, like, this stuff is all really amoebic. Like, it's all really fluid. There's no, you know, there's no clear-cut answer. There's not even necessarily, as we've discussed, there's not even, like, a deadline for when you have to be done, in the sense that as long as guys are in the portal by a certain date, which I think, as we've discussed, I believe is the end of April, then you know, you can carry that on sort of ad infinitum. Basically, the only thing I think probably, you know, is safe to assume is that, you know, from Mike Wisden's perspective, I'm guessing that barring something special or unforeseen, he'd like to have all of this done well in advance of summer workouts starting in early mid-June, so that when the team shows up, the team that's there is the team, and he can make his plans. He can start to build out his ideas. He can start to, you know, tinker with different, you know, rotations or options and say, well, this might work and this might not, and not have to maybe have something hanging over him that's like, well, we might add somebody in late July and that might change the whole direction of what we're doing over here. My, you know, sort of, I guess, assumption on past behavior is Woodson would probably like to have things relatively settled by the time.
But as you mentioned,
you know, by mid late May, so that once you start making your summer plans, you feel like you got all the pieces in place and you say, my team is my team, and now we move forward.
Yeah, and you also said that it's not guaranteed to happen. We'd like it to happen, but again.
Well, and again, this goes back to like, well, okay, so are you willing to compromise? Do you say, well, we need this? Well, this guy ticks 7 of the 10 boxes that we need for this position for a bench shooter. Maybe he's a little shorter than you want. Maybe he's not quite as good defensively, or you know, maybe he can't handle the ball very well, so you can't maybe use him as kind of an auxiliary point guard when he's on the floor. But you say, okay, but it's May 20th.
We don't have any choice.
You know, just like, are you willing to compromise on this, recognizing that he fills enough of the need, and maybe you find a solution somewhere else? It's, you know, you know I'm a big Liverpool fan. Jurgen Klopp has often said, you know, in transfers, he says, I don't have, like, most of the time, a list of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 players for one position. And if we don't get one, we move to 2. And if we don't get 2, we move to 3. I have a list of 1 or 2. And if we can't have them, then I will just approach the problem with a different solution.
Right.
Instead of, you know, buying a classic holding midfielder, if we can't get the one I want, then I'll just go buy a different player. I'll do something different with him. I'll move somebody else into a different role, and the whole thing will function differently. And you'll never know that, you know,
the wants and needs were different.
Yeah, like, right? It was just, I came up with a different solution to the problem rather than saying, I'm going to compromise going a certain way down the list. And that's, again, where a coach might say, hey, I'll compromise. I've got 4 guys here. Any one of the 4. This one's number 1. This one's number 2. This one's number 3. This one's number 4.
But we
got
to have somebody
who can
shoot
it. Any of the 4 would make it work for me, whatever it is. Backcourt depth, frontcourt depth, 3-point shooting, whatever. But he also might say, actually, I only have 2. And if I can't have that, then I'll just go – I'll go back to the drawing board and I'll figure something else out.
Interesting, because basketball is a little bit different, right? We know the game is played a little bit differently, and Mike Woodson is, rebuilding this team very similarly to the way he constructed his first, 3 teams? This is number 4?
This is number 4.
At Indiana University. We heard that we're going to play 4 around 1, but Trace is here, and, well, we had to change our plan because Trace is here. Well, then Trace left, and then we went. Indiana went out and got another big 7-foot post player and decided to go big again. And, that didn't lead Indiana back to the tournament, or we didn't knock down enough shots to get to that point. And now you go out, Miles Rice, we talked about last week. You can go back and listen to our interview at WGCLradio.com. Here it is, and again, another big post player and a backcourt player that did not light up the 3-point shooting spectaculars, and officially today, Jordan Tucker has signed. I don't know why that's news. It's just the paperwork goes through. Is that the only thing that's official about
Yeah,
that?
Well, there's – I forget what the spring window is. It may have just opened yesterday or today. It usually is in, like, mid-April. And, again, we've all kind of forgotten that high school recruiting is still going on. Like,
sure.
You get so bogged down in one or the other that, like, I remember last season when Indiana kind of got involved in McKenzie and Bocco, and it felt like some of my readers were like, whoa, we forgot about that. Like, yeah. You know, like, because Indiana had been so intense around the portal with, like, Khalil Ware and Jordan Ledlam and, you know, Peyton Sparks and Anthony Walker and this and this and this. And so it was like, oh, yeah, high school player. Let's see if he's interested in coming in too. But, you know, there was a time when the high school spring window was what dominated. You know, if you had a hole or two in your roster, you were going back into the high school window
to see who was left.
To see who you could find, if somebody reopened late or a late riser or somebody like that. And I think, you know, with Tucker, again, it's probably just kind of gotten lost in the cycle because Indiana's taken a couple pretty high profile transfer commitments. They may be in line for 1 or 2 more here before this little window of the wider window, forgive that's clumsily phrased, kind of starts to close.
They're used to clumsily phrased on this program.
That's
You're fine.
But but you know, I think people kind of forgot, like, hey, there was this fight. Now he's a different kind of player to Liam McNeely, more mid-range, needs to work on the 3-point shot. I understand why people sort of hear that and they're like, oh boy,
here we go again.
But you know that what it does strike me is, ever since Indiana took Umar Ballo, I've thought a lot about how Matt Painter handled his team last year, and I don't know that Indiana's got the shooting depth Purdue had, and that could wind up being a problem. You even think, though, about 2 years ago, and Purdue really statistically couldn't shoot it very well. They only had 1 or 2 guys that were really consistent from
right.
the three-point
line. Probably a better comparison.
But Painter had the ability, and he developed it within his team, to flip between 2 big lineups that had primarily Zach Edey and Trey Kaufman-Wren, who are, you know, Edey is obviously almost exclusively a post player, and Kaufman-Wren's pretty much, I mean, I would argue Malik Renew is more offensively versatile right now than Trey Kaufman. In terms of face-up game, stepping out from behind the three-point line, that kind of stuff. Their numbers, it should be said, in volume are fairly similar. The point is, Purdue played a game not dissimilar to what Indiana tried to do, from a personnel standpoint at least, but Painter knew when to go small. And you look at, you know, one of the many tools that I pull off KenPom. They have a basically lineup frequency over the last five games, your 10 most used lineups. Over Purdue's last five games of the season, I'm presuming that's all postseason tournament. I don't think he stops, limits them to like the regular season. Four of the 10 had Kaufman Wren at the four. Six of the 10 had Mason Gillis at the four. And so you suddenly bring in a Bryson Tucker, and you aren't going, you know, I do think Indiana will try to take at least one more forward. You know, forward center type player, somebody to bang, somebody
get some fouls.
Yeah, yeah. Or even if it's, you know, like this kid Elijah Malone, who I think is on campus today. He was a small college player of the year last year, very much a stretch guy. You know, shoots like
6'10".
Yeah, he's from Grace College, obviously smaller level, but he's like 6'9", 6'10". He shot 37% from three last season, 60-something% from the field overall. Really good from the free throw line. Very much a different kind of option to either, at least on paper, Malik Renew or Umar Ballo. So maybe you're doing something a little more flexible there, but you also have, in theory, you bring in Bryson Tucker, the ability
and slide to do a little bit more
Mbako at the four. Yeah. And
that opens your floor up.
Well, and that again, it gives you the ability to play either way. And listen, I get it, Purdue lost the national championship game, but like, who wouldn't love to at least get the chance to play for a national championship?
Yeah, they got beat as a one seed by 16 the first
and
year.
And they won their conference.
Twice in a row.
And like,
by a mile.
Like, if I'm sorry, that you by know, a mile. Rivalry, set rivalry aside, if you were an Indiana fan, would you rather have your last 2 years or Purdue's last two
Not
years?
Not even close.
So the point is, it can be done. You have to have, first of all, yes, you have to shoot the ball better. Second of all, you have to have, I wouldn't say better point guard play. I would say more consistent, like, Trey Galloway didn't come on till later in the season. There was clearly a void there for a while. It just never felt because of his injuries, and I don't think this was really his fault. But, you know, that the Xavier Johnson we saw from, like, February 1 to November 30, 2022, it just felt like he never got that back because he was injured so much that it just – his seasons got broken up. He was constantly dealing with something. He was constantly looking to find his rhythm again. My point is, you bring in Miles Rice. You already have Trey Galloway. You already have Gabe Cupps, who I think people have forgotten about, but played a lot of minutes last season. I understand wasn't always super productive in those minutes, but he's got that banked. You go out and target another guard, like maybe someone like – I mean, Connor Hickman I think would have fit this bill to some extent. I think Kanan Carlisle, the kid from Stanford, does fit this bill to some extent. A guy who's not a point guard, but you can put the ball in his hands sometimes. He can make some plays. He can get some other people involved. So you got some of that, you know, some of that dynamism in terms of ball handling and an offensive sort of creativity that you probably didn't have consistently enough last year. You do need shooting, but in theory, you also do have the flexibility in your lineup to say, hey, sometimes we'll just go small, Renew at the five. Sure. Or sometimes if Malik gets in foul trouble, the solution won't be to look to the bench for the next forward. It'll be, Umar Ballo is such a dominant rebounder to begin with. He'll just play the five. McKenzie will slide to the four, and we can either put Bryson Tucker at the three or go three guards at the three.
And the other part of that is, the better basketball players you have, the better team you're going to be, because your theory does not have to be perfect. I think you're trying to make that point, aren't you? I think I'm following along with that. If you have more guys that can create their own shot, you'll have more guys that can create their own shot instead of run the stuff. And that's the part I think Indiana struggled with last year. When things bogged down, it was really hard to get a basket.
Yeah.
Really hard. But if Rice can get his own shot and Tucker can drive and hit mid, I don't care if he can't shoot threes at the moment, but if you can beat a guy off the dribble and get in the lane, all kinds of good things happen.
I also come back to the rebounding aspect at both ends of the
floor. Well, Ballo's going to eat up every – let's talk about Ballo.
Indiana just was not a good rebounding team.
And it was crazy because every time you
look – frankly, either of the last 2 years.
Yeah, but every time you look at the box score, Ware had 16 double-doubles. And you think, oh, geez.
Yeah.
And but Renew average
– nobody else has contributed.
That's the other problem with it.
And Ballo is –
A space eater. He's enormous.
Dominant of a rebounder. Like he was top 10 each of the last two seasons in the Pac-12 in league games in offensive and defensive rebound rate. You are talking about one of the most dominant two-way rebounders in the country. I also suspect he's a decent shot blocker. It's kind of like Zach Edey is a shot blocker. He knows how to use his length. He's not got the elite instincts. Wouldn't be stunned if he gets better. Mike Woodson made Trace Jackson Davis a better shot blocker. He made Khalil Ware a better shot blocker. Wouldn't be stunned if he makes Umar Ballo a slightly better shot blocker. So suddenly, you got a guy that protects the rim at a level that, you know, with his physical presence, maybe nobody else has yet for Indiana, because you can't move him out of the way. That's the thing. Trace Jackson Davis was sturdy, but he was a little on the small side. Khalil Ware was long, but he was clearly still needing to add some muscle. Now you've got a guy who's got both. Obviously, you lose some of the offensive versatility.
And he's played 1,000 games at high-level basketball.
But you can look to Kanan Carlisle for that. You can, if he commits, you can look to Miles Rice for that. You can look to, you know, Trey Galloway or some other player that you wind up taking out of the portal. You can't replicate a guy that is just that in control of the glass at both ends of the floor.
Very helpful.
And so then suddenly, you know, you're better defensively because you're not giving up all these second chances, and you're better offensively because you can make a few more mistakes. Because he's going to give you 3-4 extra possessions a game.
Huge.
Against a lot of teams.
And we don't have to worry about him shrinking to the competition. And I don't mean that negatively to Peyton Sparks, but Peyton Sparks had great numbers.
To your point, you know, Trace Jackson Davis was a junior by the time Mike Woodson gets a hold of him, works with him, whatever. And there was a clear breakthrough that junior year for Trace against bigger players, against your Kofi Coburns and your Hunter Dickinsons, and guys that either with their length or their strength could kind of get some leverage on him in some way. And then his senior year, he's dominant. Khalil Ware comes from Oregon, where he really struggled in Indiana, almost kind of had to revive his confidence a little bit, bring his game along a little bit. Obviously, we've talked about the weight that he added and the difference that
probably
made.
But was not
the
proven quantity Ballo is.
Yeah, Ballo, to your point, he's done this for 3 years.
At a high level.
Like for a team that went to a Sweet 16 last year and has won 2 Pac-12 titles. Like, you know, there's nothing he hasn't seen that he's going to see in the Big Ten. He's not going to, you know, I mean, he's literally played Zach Edey.
Right.
Like, I mean, you know, it's he is quite physically faced the best post player maybe in Big Ten history. And that doesn't mean he's going to go out every night and have 20-20. It just means there's baseline stuff that you're not going to have to doubt. With him.
Same with Rice.
Yeah.
Pac-12, you're already in it. You know how the game is played. We don't have to teach you. We can spend that time on Tucker.
And we've seen
about the other guys.
What point guards that are good in the pick and roll, and Rice's film and his numbers both suggest he's an outstanding pick and roll point guard. And that sounds simplistic, but it's not. There's so much decision making that goes into like split seconds.
He has good size too, right? 6'3".
He's about 6'2", 6'3". Okay. Yeah, so he's not small by college standards.
He's not Bryson, whatever his name is at Purdue.
But when you Braden Smith.
Or Braden Smith.
When you like
too many Brysons. You know, Tucker.
You have to you basically have to pick when you run a ball screen set between like 4 or 5 different options in the space of literally a second.
You have to read the game like a quarterback.
Yes. And you have to do it quickly. And that's something else people talk about with Rice is the speed. With which he plays the game. He has a great change of speed, change of direction.
Under control.
Yeah, so he gets a defender moving in one speed and suddenly he changes speed. Maybe he goes a little faster, he goes a little slower, whatever. We've already seen what point guards that excel in that sort of role do in this offense. Again, think about healthy Xavier Johnson.
Right.
And I know he was mercurial for some people, and I know toward the end of his career could frustrate people. Again, I'll argue forever, the injury, the weirdness of his sixth year, all that stuff really probably just dealt him a tough hand. But think, too, about Jalen Hood-Schifino. I mean, you know, he's a really talented player. In that offense, he made himself a first-round pick.
Yep.
So think about what a point guard who's already got a really good reputation in ball screen situations is going to do when you give him a center like Ballo, a flex four like Malik Renu. Now you got to give him some shooting. You got to give him some.
Mbako's
there. I think you can make an argument. Carlisle shot 32 of 100.
You love Carlisle. You haven't even brought up Connor Assijan yet.
Well, we can get to him.
Okay.
My thing with Carlisle is Stanford asked him to do like a little bit of everything last year. He was top 10 in the Pac-12 in league games in percentage of possessions used, which is
huge usage rate, right?
And like, I mean, it's like 27.5, 28%, something. That is a large number for a freshman who was not, he was a top 60 recruit, top 70 recruit, but it's not like he was a McDonald's All-American, number one point guard in the country. Like they asked a lot of him in terms of, you know, creativity, getting his own shot, getting other people's shots. I suspect that a year later, when he's got a dedicated point guard, maybe even two, and it's a little bit less like, we need to put the ball in your hands, you need to go make the offense for us, I wouldn't be shocked if 32% becomes 35 or 36. And it's 36 with...
Just because he doesn't have the load to carry?
Yeah, it's 36 with maybe a little bit less free throw shooting, but still a really reliable free throw shooter, 77.5, 77.6, I think, 77.8, somewhere in there.
But again, another major college basketball player.
Yes. Now, the question I think for me is, and, you know, listen, I used to watch a lot more Pac-12 basketball before I had kids because that's just so late at night. The question I have is how these guys fit in defensively. Because
that league is not known for guarding anybody.
And that's Indiana has hurt for perimeter defense. You know, Indiana's always had, you want to talk about rebounding issues. Well, one of the big rebounding issues the last year and to some extent 2 years ago was Indiana would get beat off the dribble. Teams wouldn't go to the rim because they didn't want to mess with Trace or Khalil Ware, but they would kick it out. And even if it was a little contested, the three was considered their best shot. They'd take it, and a long carom. It's you're not getting, you know, Ballow or Renew. You're getting somebody who's not necessarily going to gravitate toward the rim when the shot goes up, reading the carom and getting the rebound. Indiana could really stand to have some guys that can just stay in front a little bit better. And I think that's the area where when I look at Rice, when I look at potentially adding Carlisle, when I look at frankly potentially adding a Sejan, because I didn't necessarily think he was great as a defender his freshman year. No. I think last year was affected by the back injury to a certain extent. The question, maybe the compelling question around him is how much, but you can, if you feel like you can write off what he struggled with last year due to the back injury.
But Sejan's got good size.
Yeah.
He's well put together.
But I thought he was a real negative for Wisconsin as a freshman defensively.
Yeah.
But that's fine. Freshmen are that way. That's just how freshmen are going to be. You know, 49 times out of 50. And then last year, again, I think if you're Indiana or anyone recruiting him, I think the question you ask with the Sejan is, what was the back injury and what was basically shortcomings in his game that maybe can or can't be fixed?
Right, exactly. He's visiting today, yesterday?
He visited yesterday. I think he's gone. I believe he's going to take his Nebraska visit this weekend. There was some smoke around him potentially committing to Indiana. I believe he's going to hold his Nebraska visit. He's already been to, if I'm not mistaken, Maryland and South Carolina.
Wants to stay in the league minus South Carolina.
And so I feel like South Carolina may have taken – I can't keep up with all of it, but South Carolina may have taken someone that, at least in their fans' estimation, may have filled the hole that he was being recruited for. And that happens too. This is musical chairs. Everybody's trying to make sure that they get – they sit down where they want to, but that they're not still standing when the music stops. I think a Sejan, based on what I have heard, I think the Nebraska visit still happens, and then a decision not long after that.
You don't have to tell the Bloomington insiders this, but there is a part of the population that wants to know why Connor Hickman chose Cincinnati. The Drew Adams connection seems to be quite obvious.
That was a big one for me. Okay. And, you know, I mean, I don't know if Indiana didn't lean hard enough into this role or that recruiting pitch or whatever. But bear in mind with Hickman, and I think I've mentioned his name on this program before, I've long believed Connor Hickman should play at the high major level. I believed it when he was in high school.
Well, Big 12's high major level.
Yeah, no, I'm saying I watched him play with Anthony Leal and Noah Jaeger in high school, and I know he had some injury issues.
Yeah, I missed a senior year.
And I just said, you know, I think that kid is a high major. I think he's a little small. He's, you know, 6'2"-ish, but I think he's a high major combo guard type player. And where the Drew Adams connection comes in particular is he was the kind of player, I know Indiana was keeping close tabs on him. I think a couple other Big Ten programs were. I think Dayton was in around there. And then COVID shut down the spring and summer where...
All right, welcome back. Part two is Zach Osterman here on a Thursday afternoon. Little 500 weekend. We'll talk a little bit about the bike race tomorrow. And we will wrap up the spring game tomorrow as well when Zach pops in with us in the Crazy Horse Tavern Happy Hour. But tonight, 8 o'clock, Big Ten Network. Doors open at 6:30. Keep an eye on the social media channels if any weather happens to pop up. Free food, free drinks for the early arrivals. They'll have open merch places to get all your football gear and the posters and all that other fun stuff. But we're more curious about what's going to happen on the field. 2 15-minute periods. Offense versus defense. Defense will get points for their efforts. Offense will get points for theirs. First time with Kurt Cignetti, but we heard earlier in the week the quarterback from Ohio, the big boy, seems to be separating himself clearly. What do you expect to see from him and the offense tonight? Because let's be frank, that's Kurt's strength. He's been recruited into be the coach here, as Scott Dolson told us, because of his offensive credentials and putting things forward. So that's what I'm looking forward to.
Yeah,
tonight.
I think you're looking in spring games, you're always looking at like two deeps and, you know, who are the ones and who are the twos, and, you know, it'll be a little harder to kind of figure some of that stuff out. But that, you know, for example, like Carter Smith. If Carter Smith's on the field, the number one offense is probably on the field at left tackle. You know, that sort of thing. So you are curious to see the rotation at quarterback. You're curious to see maybe, you know, who's provided some depth. Where's the wide? We saw Indiana just go crazy with this wide receiver recruiting. Four transfers, McCulley back, Cooper back, all this different stuff. How has that settled out? But, and I think that's important because one of the things I'm going to be looking at is how much four wide does Indiana play tonight? You know, Kurt Cignetti has kind of suggested that, you know, he likes to play some four wide. Indiana played spread offenses under Tom Allen, but no matter who the coordinator was, those offenses nearly always had at least one tight end or H-back type player on the field. I don't necessarily think you'll see quite so much of that on on Thursday. It's tonight. Sorry. I get lost sometimes. The portal, I'm just sort of like, I'm counting the days by visits, not days of the week. But I think you'll see some of that tonight probably reflected. Not that you'll never see tight ends. Indiana will use its tight ends, just maybe not quite so religiously, I guess, for lack of a better term, as it did.
Well, let me ask you this way for our listeners. Are we going to run a spread offense? Are we going to do a little run?
Well, I think you run a spread offense, but I think, I mean, everybody does the spread a little bit differently because everybody's trying to do something a little bit different out of it, if you understand what I'm saying. And that's where
I haven't watched a lot of James Madison football,
back to just wondering, like, for example, how many four receiver sets do we see? Because we didn't see a lot of it under Tom Allen. I think we may see more of it under Kurt Cignetti. And that'll inform, again, the wide receiver rotation, but it'll also inform, well, this is how he's going to recruit, and this is what he's going to prioritize, and all this different kind of stuff. So, you know, offensively, I think you're looking at a lot of that stuff. You're curious about some of the transfers. You're curious about Elijah Surratt. You're curious about the running back rotation, which has pretty much been completely remade in the portal now that Trent Howland's gone back into the portal. You know, I'm watching the offensive line. Cignetti has been kind of reserved in his praise.
But he has mentioned Bostad.
Well, and he's also mentioned the offense. I mean, he's praised the offensive line, which sometimes if a coach just praises, you know, a player or a position group at all, that means they're actually quietly a lot more impressed with them. They're just not given to being particularly effusive unless you are just like an absolute all-star.
Well, the reason I brought that up is he did keep Bostad.
Yeah.
And that was the only guy he kept, right, from the previous regime on the field to coach. And pointing out that if the offense is doing well, that he's telling you that he got that right. That's part of it. Let me ask you this. When we talk about offense, and I want to stay here for the moment, is Curtis Rourke is 23 years old. I'm trying to think the last time Indiana had a quarterback under center, and I'm probably missing something like you're missing the days of the week. That wasn't a freshman or a sophomore. When was the last time we were experienced a quarterback? Peyton Ramsey before he transferred? I mean, last year.
Connor Bazelak and Jack Tuttle.
Bazelak came after his – he was a
junior.
He played 2 years, right?
Yeah, he was a junior.
That's not exactly –
And yeah. Tuttle behind him was a
– But Tuttle never played.
Yeah.
He was older, but now you got a guy that's played a lot. It's almost – I don't want to say –
Oh, yeah, in terms of total attempts,
I don't want to say it's like Omar Ballo, but
– It's a lot closer to like when you had Peyton Ramsey.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's a big deal because, number one, he's a big guy. What's his nickname there? Something about Maple something?
The Maple Missile.
Well, there you go.
Because he's from Canada.
Well, you don't want to get him confused with Edie. He's much better looking than Edie. We'll give him We'll give him that. So he's under center. He seems to have separated himself in the quarterback position. But other guys are going to play, right? It's just not going to be all Curtis Rourke tonight. And then yesterday, Brock Lowry, who did start a handful of games last year, he's in the trenches.
He didn't. No,
didn't he?
No.
He did not. Who was the guy that left already then?
Brennan Sorsby.
All the Texas. If you're from Texas and you've left, raise your hand.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Lowry's from Ohio, but right. Either way.
Right. I'm getting confused. That's why you're the insider, Zach.
Yeah,
Austin.
Lowry. I mean, Lowry was Indiana's Tom Allen's last high school quarterback recruit. It's not that surprising that when you see Rourke come in, Jackson stay, Cherry come in, Alberto Mendoza, the kid from Florida, is going to come in the summer. You know, you start to do the math. You're not running with the ones, the twos, or the threes. And the staff is also bringing the kid that was committed to James Madison with them up from Miami to Indiana. You can kind of figure
out. Scout teams are great, but not that great. Anyhow, with NIL and all the other fun stuff that goes along with it. All right, so there's a quarterback room set. You talked about the rebuilt running back room. What's the balance of this offense when you go back and look at James Madison numbers?
They tended to be more pass heavy, but there were years where it seemed like, you know, they leaned into skill sets. So, like, if they had a guy that was more of a high volume running back, they weren't afraid to, you know, pivot to that. And I think that's always kind of probably the healthiest sort of approach to offense. You know, I mean, I've cited this before, but, you know, I remember talking to Nick Sheridan once not long after he got the coordinator job, and I asked him some question like, how does your philosophy change? What might you do differently than Kalen DeBoer, basically, like, schematically? And he said, essentially, he didn't say, I don't have a scheme, but what he said was, like, honestly, if you're a good coach, you should kind of be able to coach any offense, from the spread to the option to the eye to whatever. It's blocking and tackling. It's, you know, numbers advantage. It's run-pass balance. Like, you know, all the concepts may be different. A lot of fundamentals are the same. The challenge is having your principles and the stuff that you don't really negotiate on, and then knowing what that is. And crucially, what that isn't, and when you can negotiate with yourself on, well, this year I've got guys, a really good guy that needs me to do this. So I'm going to build the offense in this direction for him. And next year when he's gone, we won't do that as much. But we're doing it for him. Watt Fillier can do X. So that's going to be part of our offense this year. It probably won't be part of our offense next year when we don't have Watt Fillier. We'll go find somebody else. We'll say they, you know, and his point was, a good coach isn't, you know,
married,
enslaved to, this is my scheme, this is my formation, I pass the ball this many times a game. They say, this is my personnel, these are their strengths, this is how I, the old cliche of putting guys in the right position to win, and this is how I make it work, essentially, with the personnel that I have and coaching around those guys. Now, do I think Indiana is more likely to be a pass heavy team than a run heavy team? Yeah, I think so. But guess what? You know, Kurt Cignetti might have looked at his offensive line and said, these guys are better run blockers than they are pass blockers. So we're going to put some big boys behind the line of scrimmage. We're going to get downhill. We're going to get to second and six, third and two. We're just going to, you know, we're not going to run the ball all the time, but running is going to set up passing. And then maybe next year we raised these young guys to be better pass blockers. They are pass blockers. Better pass blockers, now we're going to pass the ball more than we run the ball. I think it's probably a more pass-based offense, but that's not to say that you'll never see it run the ball effectively or at volume.
We will recap the spring game for you tomorrow on Big Show Friday. We'll see how the defense did against that offense. Well, if somebody has a good night, somebody has a bad night. That's just how it goes. That's how it goes in the spring games. So we'll talk about that. We'll get you caught up with everything happening for Little 500 and the bike race on the weekend as well. We'll do it with Zach Osterman from the IndyStar.com, and we'll do it tomorrow. Have a great Thursday night. Enjoy the spring game, 8 o'clock on the Big Ten Network. Your Money with David Hayes is next.